Venerable Bhikkhu Sangha and Dharma friends, for the last 2 days, you have been discussing the use of dharma in improving the society. A very important subject. Social problems are there, and unless something is done to solve these problems, certainly the misery will keep on increasing. But when we have to improve the society, we can't forget individual. Man matters most. And when we have to improve the man, then we can't forget the mind. Mind matters most. The mind has to be improved. And for that, dharma is the only remedy. No other remedy is there. And dharma also applied dharma. Of course, having discussions like this creates an atmosphere of awareness. Many who have not tasted dharma may get inspiration, may get an understanding as to what dharma really is. Because in the name of dharma, so much adharma has developed in the world and has become so harmful for the human society. At the intellectual level, at least, we start understanding what really dharma is. But that should not be the end of it. Otherwise, again, such seminars will be for intellectual entertainments, intellectual exercises. You very rightly pointed out, your seminar has come to the conclusion that actual practical steps have to be taken. Mere sermons won't do. Our country especially does not lack in sermon. We have been listening to sermons from ages. It enters this ear and comes out of the other ear. We say, wonderful, this is very good. But how to apply it? How to apply dharma in life? There it is necessary to deal with the individual and the mind of the individual. Yes, it looks a very huge task. Forget billions of people around the world, even in this country. Millions of people. Will they be able to practice vipassana? It's a big question mark. But I am very optimistic. 2,200 years ago, this very technique was applied in this country in a mass scale. We still do not know how it was, but it was applied in mass scale. We still have inscriptions on the rocks where the great emperor of this country, who is acknowledged as the greatest ruler of the world in history, Emperor Ashoka, he declares that even before me, there were rulers in this country who very much wanted to improve the society. People should live in harmony. People should have respect for the elders. People should have love for the youngers. There should not be quarrels between one society and the other, one sect and the other. There must be peace and harmony all around. Many of the rulers in the past wished that. I also wish that. But I am very happy to say that I am successful. None else was successful before me. I am successful. And then he continues to write, one reason of my success is that I made such laws, the whole administration tried to influence the people to live a good life. But then again he says, the advantage of this was very little, very little. The real cause of my success was Vipassana. With Vipassana, I could attain what others could not attain. That is a testimonial, historical testimonial of our country, where this technique was applied in a mass scale and there was a big change in the society. In our country, we talk so much about Rama Rajya, a very ideal Rajya, good. We talk about it. But when you go to the neighboring countries around, when they talk of an ideal Rajya, they say Ashoka Rajya. Ashoka Rajya was wonderful, so good, so dhammic. We have to find out as to how he was successful in taking Vipassana to every nook and corner of the country. He appointed many teachers. They were called Dhamma Matya, and they went on teaching this right from the royal family to the poorest person in the country. We have to find out ways and means. But unless the individual is changed, the mind of the individual is changed, it will again be very difficult to expect that the society will get changed. Of course, it is quite true that if it is possible, we start with people, we make people interested in this technique, in Dhamma, in this way of life, from the top. All good things or bad things, they percolate from the top and then spread in the whole society. But how to attract these people? Well, for that, the work that is being done during the last 2 or 2.5 decades, people have started appreciating that there is something in it. Although there are many people who doubt about it, but still results are coming. So they have started thinking there must be something in it. And I am sure a time will come, sooner rather than later, that these people at the helm of the affairs, at the top people, they will start coming to understand what it is. And misery is there everywhere. Even those who are at the top, I say they are more miserable than anyone else. Top people of the commercial community, I passed through that in my life and I know how miserable these people are. Top people in the political sphere, I have been very close to them in Burma, and here also I hear, I see, very miserable people, very miserable people. Similarly, in every sector of the society, those who are at the helm of the affairs are really miserable people. They need peace and harmony within. Who does not need peace and harmony? If they come to know that there is a way by which I can experience peace and harmony within myself, and I can help the atmosphere around me to be peaceful and harmonious, certainly people will get attracted. It may take some time. We start the work, and it is very rightly said, that we work with the coming generation, it must go to the students. And I have seen that the students are accepting it and they get results. Their memory becomes very strong. Their mind to understand their subject becomes very strong. They understand their subject, grasp their subject so properly. And most important thing, their nervousness goes away. A student might have learned his subject perfectly well, but at the time of examination, he becomes very nervous, forgets everything, and gets very low marks, or may fail even. With this technique we have seen, we advise them, before you open your question paper, just observe 2 minutes, your anapana, your respiration. Mind calms down, and then they answer their papers. Very good results are coming. And then, of course, the character building must start at that age. So all those advantages are there. And these are not advantages just at the level of theory. These are advantages which have been proved by practice. So I'm very happy that this seminar has come to the conclusion that this wonderful technique should go to the students in schools, in colleges. That will certainly have a very good effect. And then I have seen that boys and girls of new generation, when you talk to them about dharma, what dharma? They see their parents, what dharma? They go to this temple, this masjid or this girjaghar or that girjaghar, and no change in their life. Their whole life is immoral. They are seeing all that. They don't have any attraction for dharma. But when they come to know that dharma is so scientific, dharma is so rational, so pragmatic, and you get results here and now, you just try. I have noticed that the younger generation is accepting dharma, proper dharma, easily, more easily than the elders. It is worth trying. Something should be done. And I am sure these kinds of seminars, there was a time when I was very much against these intellectual games. What you will do, only people will have intellectual entertainment, wonderful. Now I know what dharma is. Oh, it is so good, it is so wonderful. Now I know vipassana, what vipassana is, it's so wonderful. You don't feel like tasting it? Because you know now. People used to come to me in those days also when I came from Burma. You have any book on Vipassana? Please give me. I will understand everything. I am an intellectual person, intelligent person. Please give me. People are interested just to know things at the intellectual level. This has been a big curse of our country. One must be interested to learn at the experiential level, the real level, the actual level. Rasgulla is very, very sweet. Oh, very sweet. We keep on hearing, Rasgulla is very sweet, very sweet. We have seminars after seminars to say, Rasgulla is very sweet, is very sweet. Then we have seminars where we explain why it is sweet. Because look, one of the ingredients is sugar. Oh, because there is sugar, so it is sweet. Ah, wonderful. Now I understand. Wonderful. Hey, what you gain by this? What you gain? You have not tasted it. You have not placed this rasgulla on your tongue. What is the use of this understanding? But this is what has been happening in our country, and it still keeps on happening. I am glad that these seminars are not going to be only explaining people that there is sugar in rasgulla, therefore it is sweet. This must be to create a sort of encouragement in the mind of the people that let me taste it. Let me taste it. Let me see how sweet it is. Then only dhamma is dhamma. Yesterday, I was told that there was a very interesting discussion about the meaning of the word dharma, what the scriptures say, what is the meaning according to the scriptures. I smile listening to all that. I was told when I was given this responsibility of Vipassana, Acharya of Vipassana, we are told that however good another work may be, you are not supposed to take any other work. Ananya. This is the only work you have to do throughout the life. Just teach Vipassana to the people, nothing else. I came here, I know with my own experience also, people don't understand at all. Even Buddha's words, they are just meant wherever it is taught, in schools or colleges, just to get a certain degree. How many truths are there? Oh, four truths. What are they? This, 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 this. Good, you get so many marks. Wonderful. What is the Eightfold Noble Path? 1, 2, 3, 4, 8. How wonderful, you got your marks. Dharma is not for this purpose. Not at all. You can't understand Dharma in this way. You have to apply in life. You have to experience it. Then you understand. Well, that is why we took up this very important responsibility of publishing the words of Buddha, because the words of Buddha contain so much detail of dharma, so much detail of this practice of Vipassana, but those details can be understood only by real practice. Otherwise, Dhamma Niyamta is law of nature, yet it won't have that meaning. If it is only trying to understand at the intellectual level, it won't have that meaning. Sa chitta pariyodapanam, you purify your mind, totality of the mind, it will have no meaning of Vipassana. Because you are just answering the questions for the school, for the college, to get high marks. When you practice, every word will carry a different meaning altogether. Different meaning altogether. Not only the words of Buddha, every scripture will carry different meaning. My experience of last 25, 26 years in this country, large number of Christian priests have come. And the first Mother Superior who joined a course, Mother Mary, after passing through the course, he says, "You are teaching Christianity in the name of Buddha." "Yes, I'm teaching Christianity in the name of Buddha." There was a course in the mosque, and a very learned Maulvi who participated in the course, he says, "Now we understand. Oh, there are two ayats of Qur'an which nobody could understand. And now we understand. By this practice, it is so clear." And he recited those ayats and explained to me that how we didn't understand. The ayats say, one who observes the respiration and observes properly will observe Allah. One who observes the body and observes properly will observe Allah. We were reading it. How to observe respiration? And by observing respiration, what Allah has got to do? And this body, every day, when I take bath, I see whole of my body. I don't see Allah. There must be some special meaning in it. We couldn't understand. Oh, now we understand. Now we understand. People from the Sikh community have come. And they say, oh, these words never carried these meanings for us. Now we understand. I come from a very staunch Hindu family, Sanatana Hindu family. Used to recite Gita. And after passing through this process of Vipassana, every word carried different meaning altogether. I had my own meaning, understanding previously without taking Vipassana, and totally different meaning starts coming now. Then I find now very important. We need scholars who can see that the words of Buddha, where Vipassana is explained so clearly, where the law of nature is explained so clearly, where the Dhamma is scientific, is explained so clearly, let them see that the publication is exactly as it is accepted by the congregation, the sixth congregation. And the printing publication should be perfect. It is their job. But then, I am very happy. These pandits are taking interest in Vipassana. And I am very confident. These very pandits, very soon will start saying, oh, this meaning. Well, a Vipassana meditator will understand what meaning. It can't be a dictionary meaning. It must be an experiential meaning. And for that purpose, all this publication to bring out the theoretical aspect of Dhamma so that the practical aspect of Dhamma can be checked properly. And both will get inspiration to work on the path of Dhamma and experience Dhamma. It is the experience only which is going to help us. If again this remains as a big academic organization where we are publishing these Pali things and we keep on arguing about this word or that word without tasting it, it will be meaningless. So I took this decision that although teaching Vipassana remains the main responsibility as a Vipassana teacher, but at the same time, where in this country people have lost the words of Buddha, and words of Buddha contain so much in detail about Vipassana, that must come up, and with the practice of Vipassana, it must be so clear and it must be so inspiring so that people take advantage of it by practicing it. A real benefit will come only by practicing, nothing else. And I am very confident, I am very optimistic. The time is now ripened for Dhamma to spread. Not Buddha Dhamma, not Buddhist Dhamma, not Hindu Dhamma, not Muslim Dhamma, not Christian Dharma. We take out dharma from all these things. Dharma as dharma. Living the life of morality cannot be the monopoly of Buddhists, cannot be the monopoly of Hindus, cannot be the monopoly of Christians or Muslims or Sikhs. It's universal. One has to live the life, a good life, healthy life, without harming anybody else. Then only a healthy member of the society will create a healthy society. If the member of the society is not healthy, the society can't be healthy. So one has to abstain from all kinds of physical or vocal actions which disturb the peace and harmony of the society. It is good for everybody. It is not limited to a particular sect. How to live this kind of life? People understand very well that no, I should not kill anybody. I should not steal something which does not belong to me. I should not commit sexual misconduct. This is not good. I should not speak lie and deceive others. It's not good. I should not get intoxicated. It is not good for me. In spite of all that understanding, one keeps on breaking all these rules. Why? Because one has no control over the mind. One is not master of one's own mind. One is a slave of one's own mind. That is why the second step of dharma, develop mastery over the mind. Merely understanding and accepting a moral way of life, you can't live that kind of life unless you are master of your own mind. Second step, master of your own mind. To develop this mastery over the mind, to develop the control of the mind, to develop one-pointedness of the mind, you need some object or the other. There are many objects. But if you want to keep dharma free from all sectarian bondages, then the object must be such which can be accepted by everyone. It should not be a sectarian object. You observe your respiration. Respiration is respiration. You can't label it Hindu respiration or Muslim respiration or Buddhist respiration. Respiration. One is breathing in, breathing out, you're just aware of it, that's all. Breathing in, breathing out, you're aware of it. And observing this respiration, mind gets concentrated, good. But still, at the depth of the mind, you accumulated so many complexes deep inside. Time and again, they are sleeping volcanoes, Buddha said, Anushaya Klesha. Sleeping volcanoes, they will erupt any moment and overpower you. Your control of the mind is gone. Unless these impurities from the depth of the mind are also eradicated, it won't be an ideal life. So the third step, Paryodhapanam. Not ordinary purification, totality of the purification, Paryodhapanam. There are many ways by which we can purify the surface of the mind. You divert your mind from the bad thoughts, ill thoughts, to good thoughts. You have some good object of meditation, your mind gets concentrated in that. There's a purification process is there, but deep inside the volcanoes are still there. This wonderful technique was found, how to go to the depth of the mind and eradicate these complexes. And when these deep-rooted complexes go out, naturally, the purity of the mind, nature of the pure mind is such, it will be full of love, compassion, goodwill. Wonderful. Now by nature you will live a good life. You won't have to make an effort to observe morality, these five precepts. You won't even have to make an effort to concentrate your mind. Purity is there. Purity is there, mind is concentrated, you are master of your own mind automatically. That is why these three steps are very important. And when you take the object to purification of the mind, the interaction of your body and mind, how something arises in the mind, starts influencing the body. This was a big discovery of this super scientist. There were many teachers, there are still many teachers, who teach us that never get indulged in the object of this senses. Never get indulged in the vision, in the rupa, or in the sound, or in the smell, or in the taste, or something tangible, or even thoughts. Don't get indulged. Otherwise, it is a bondage, big bondage. And this will give you big misery. Here was a super scientist that the human society could produce. He found out, it is not that we are getting indulged in the object of our senses. The object of the senses come in contact with the senses and then something starts inside. A sensation starts inside. And reaction that we make of craving or aversion is towards these sensations, not towards the object outside. That is only apparent truth. It appears to be so, that I like this particular shape, the color, I like this particular word, I like this particular smell, I like this particular taste, I crave for it, I like this something tangible which is so pleasant to me. No, you are generating craving and aversion towards the sensation. Of course, the sensation arose because of the contact of the outside object. Phassapachaya Vedana. The contact was there. And if you keep on remaining away from this contact, you have to live in the world. You can't run away from this. And you keep on suppressing your mind. Don't get indulged in that. At times you are successful, at times deep inside you are still indulged in that. But if this scientific thing was found out, the interaction of mind and matter, well look, something has come in contact with the eye sense door or ear sense door or nose sense door or tongue sense door or body sense door or mind sense door, and a sensation has started. This sensation is pleasant to you and you start craving. This sensation is unpleasant to you and start generating aversion. Phassapachaya Vedana. Every contact with the outside world will generate a sensation in the body. And Vedana Pachaya Tanha. Only after your experience of this sensation on the body, then you start generating craving or aversion. He found out a way that you have to come out of that at this level, at the level of Vedana, at the level of sensation. You forget sensation. And you keep on rectifying your mind, correcting your mind. It's good. It helps you to correct the mind at the surface level only. Deep inside, the habit pattern remains the same. Deep inside, the so-called unconscious mind, which is never unconscious, but the so-called unconscious mind is constantly in contact with these body sensations, day and night, whether you are asleep or awakened. Every moment, the so-called deepest level of the mind is in contact with body sensation, and not only that, it keeps on reacting to these body sensations. It is a slave, it is a prisoner of its own habit pattern. We have to take that out. We have to change that habit pattern, break that habit pattern. We have to go to that depth. And for that, this Vipassana was found. Observe the sensations and see how you are reacting to it. Then not only the intellectual level of the mind, but the deepest level of the mind is changing the habit pattern. Now you are not reacting. You are understanding the truth about it. The Dhammaniyanta, the law of nature. Look, it is changing. It is anicca. Not because the scripture says so, not because Buddha said so, not because your teacher says so. You are experiencing now with your own experience, changing. Changing. Something which is constantly changing. What is the purpose of generating craving towards it? What is the purpose of generating aversion towards it? Let me observe. Let me observe. And as you observe, you are breaking your habit pattern, and that toward the deepest level of the mind, and you are coming out of the slavery of the blind reaction of the mind. So scientific. And is such a super scientist of the world, he says whether Buddha arises or not, Buddha or no Buddha, this law of nature is there always. It was there even before a Buddha, millions upon millions of years ago. Same law was there, law of nature was there. Today it is so, and it will remain so for millions upon millions. It is eternal. That's why I said, Esa Dhammo Sanantano. Esa Dhammo Sanantano. This is forever. What a Buddha does? He discovers this reality, makes use of it for his own liberation, and out of compassion starts distributing it. A super scientist, because not an ordinary scientist. An ordinary scientist will try to discover certain thing for the comforts of mankind, which may also be used for the harm of the mankind. But a super scientist has found out a way how to purify the mind at the deepest level, so that you can't harm anybody at all. You can't harm. Your nature won't allow you to harm now. Your mind is so pure, full of love, full of compassion. And this is again a law of nature. The law of nature of the pure mind is to remain full of love, full of compassion, full of goodwill. The law of the nature of impure mind is to remain miserable. Miserable with the negativities. We have to break that nature and come to this nature. This is what it is, Vipassana. To purify the mind, you are observing this reality. Like a scientist, you are observing it. You are exploring the truth about yourself within yourself. Look, mind, matter, interaction between the two. Look, a sensation arises. Look how I react to it. I generate craving, I generate aversion. And look, I become miserable. And look, I am coming out with craving and aversion. I am coming out of my misery. At the experiential level. That is why he didn't just give these four noble truths. No. Ti parivattam dvadasakaram. All these four noble truths have to be experienced. You have to practice them. Otherwise you'll be just answering a question paper. How many noble truths Buddha taught? 1, 2, 3, 4. Very good. You get 100% mark. What you gain by that? You have to experience it. Every noble truth has to be experienced at the deepest level. Then only the noble truth is noble truth, otherwise it's only a truth, not a noble truth. The noble truth should make you a noble person, should make you an Arya. Then only it is Arya Satya, otherwise not Arya Satya. I am glad now people are realizing it, and they are giving importance to the real practice of dharma without making it sectarian. If somebody had told me when I went to my teacher for the first course, look, I am going to make a Buddhist out of it, I would have been the last person to go there. I would not have been there. But someone tells me that, look, there is a way by which you can purify your mind. You can come out of craving. you can come out of aversion, and with that you can come out of your misery. Oh, that is wonderful, because this is what one was looking for. Vitaraga stit pragyata. How to get this stit pragyata? Well, when I passed through these 10 days, oh, this is applied Gita. Not merely theories, this is applied Gita. This is how one can become Vitaraga, Vita Dvesha, Vita Bhaya. One can become stit pragya. It is not to convert people from one organized religion to another organized religion. Otherwise, again, Dhamma will become sectarian. It is universal, good for everyone. Anyone can practice and continue to call himself a Hindu. A Hindu, a Hindu, a Muslim, a Muslim, a Christian, a Christian, a Jain, a Jain. Makes no difference. One becomes a good human being. Unless one is a good human being, how can one be a good Hindu or a good Muslim or a good Buddhist or a good Jain? A good human being. And Dharma teaches us how to become a good human being, not merely by sermons, by actual practice. I am fortunate I came in contact with this wonderful path. I got so much benefit in my life, which I could never expect. When I got that, it is but natural that I feel like sharing with others. Having come to this country, I feel like sharing it with others. Not with the intention of converting people to this religion or that religion. It won't make any difference. On the other hand, it will create more difficulties for the people. Let people understand that Dharma is universal. It is not tied to this particular sect or that particular sect. Of course, when we discuss Vipassana, we use the name of Buddha sometimes. Out of conditioned mind, people will say, look, this is Buddhist. Why you talk of Buddha? I smile. Why I talk of Buddha? When teaching you science, somebody talks about the law of gravity and says, Newton discovered it. Why you talk of Newton? Just a law of gravity. Of course, law of gravity was there, Newton or non-Newton. Even before Newton, the law was there, same law. With Newton, it was same. And in future also, it remains the same. Same thing, Dharma is this, Dharma. But there is somebody who discovered it. Shall we not be grateful to him? He doesn't need that gratefulness. He doesn't need to keep on using his name, Buddha, 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 and he'll be so inflated, wonderful. Now look, Goenka has gone to India and everybody talks about Buddha, Buddha. I must liberate Goenka at least. I must liberate him. Nothing doing. Nobody liberates you. Tumehi kechang atappang akhataro tathagata. You have to work. Every step you have to take. You have to work out your own salvation. A Buddha will only show the path, because he has walked over the path. This is the path. And he says, I show the path, and yet people do not walk on it. What can I do? He is not a liberator. Nobody is a liberator. And because he is not a liberator, he says, what can I do? So he says, kinti karomi. Mai kya karo? Kinti karomi. I told people, this is the path, and people don't walk over it. What can I do? Everyone has to walk over the path to get the result. And I am now glad that people have started understanding, although small number, doesn't matter. This darkness all around, such great darkness, even one lamp is lighted. There is light in a small area, doesn't matter. We are happy that there is light in a small area. Now this one lamp will become two lamps, will become three lamps, and like this it will spread. And I am sure with the use of the modern scientific facilities, whatever you are now suggesting, things can happen. If it could happen in those days of Asoka, where all these facilities, scientific facilities were not there, why it should not happen now? It will happen. I am very optimistic. But at the same time, we must be quite hopeful that look, it is working. It is working with few people. It will work with more people also. So with all the hopes we keep on working, and I am sure time has arisen now. There is so much darkness. Light is needed when there is darkness. Dhamma is needed when there is misery. The misery around the world is a sign that Dhamma must arise now. The darkness around the world is a sign that the light of Dhamma must now come on the surface and wash away this ignorance, wash away this darkness. May all of you who have come to discuss about dharma in this seminar. May all of you get inspiration to taste dharma. Let it not be a discussion of the rasgulla, let it be a taste of rasgulla. And live a very happy life, very harmonious life, good for you and good for all others.
Bhavat sarva mangalam. Bhavat sarva mangalam. Bhavat sarva mangalam. Sab mangal, sab ka mangal hoye.